live and direct from the free speech zone called America. The weekend home for truly radical progressives. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ.
Hello and welcome to The Weekend North America. We're glad to have you here on the final show of 2008 for The Russ Belville Show. I am, of course, Russ Belville, your host and radical extraordinaire. Glad to have you here joining us for the next 2 hours of political talk. We're going to be taking a look back at the year that was 2008, and we also have our special end of the year annual 2008 Lunatic Fringe Awards coming up. Who's going to be the most lunatic of the right wing this year, in my humble estimation? Also, we're going to be taking your calls at 888-7-RADICAL, that's 888-772-3422, discussing the year that was or the year that's coming up, 2009. What's your New Year's resolution? What do you want to see happen in the upcoming Obama administration? We're going to get your opinions on that at 888-7-RADICAL. But before we get to all of that, we've got to introduce our engineer, the man answering your phone calls all the way across the continent in Washington, D.C., the man from London, England, a man who'll dial 999 for a bobby if a lad with a catapult flicks a drawing pin in his eye and interrupts his watching of the Beeb, because those license fees are murder, our very own Stevie Webb.
Yay! Thanks, Double R. It's great to be here again.
Yeah, we
it
are.
It really is.
We are having ourselves a winter out here in Portland, Oregon. Oh, my goodness. The whole past week, the news stations were calling it Arctic Blast. It was as if it was like 9/11 and Katrina all rolled into one for our local news here, because when they get like a flake of snow here in Portland, Oregon, mm-hmm. they freak out.
Yeah.
We got about a foot.
Oh, God.
So the whole
city Arctic Blast 08. Arctic Blast 08.
That's right. Arctic Blast. Only thing it was lacking is some good Fox News exploding graphics. That's all it needed, man. I'm telling you.
Man.
We're all frozen in. The cars are all buried under piles and piles of snowdrifts. Fortunately, I've got the four-wheel drive Jeep with chains, so I played Mr. Good Samaritan Radical last couple of days. I've been towing people out of snowdrifts and helping little old ladies across the street.
Oh, you know, my goodness.
All those wonderful things. And they say we liberals hate America. What are they talking about?
Super Russ. Truth, justice, and the American way.
That's right.
Now kneel before Russ.
I also, hey, Stevie, I also wanted to thank you on the air for your present that you got me. Stevie sent me a Christmas present. And it goes something like this.
There are some who call me Tim.
If you if you follow our show at all, you know that Stevie and I are crazy for the whole Monty Python comedy stuff. And so Stevie sent me the hat from John Cleese as Tim the Enchanter. In the Monty Python and the Holy Grail, you know when the big wizard is blowing everything up and then they're going to fight the big rabbits and all? The hat with the horns on it? That's my gift. It was so perfect. Thank you, Stevie, so much.
You are so welcome, Russ the Enchanter.
I am now Russ the Enchanter. I don't even have to come up with a Halloween costume now. It's perfect. I loved it. Well, we're going to be giving you a present here for our final show of 2008 with our retrospective of just what went down throughout this past year, the highlights and the lowlights, so to speak. And coming up in our fourth segment at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be doing our Lunatic Fringe Awards like we always do. But this one's a special one. It's the Lunatic Fringer of the Year. We got a lot of contestants out there, of course. We got Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Michael Savage, Rush Limbaugh. There's a lot of them out there on the right-wing radio dial. And we're going to be picking the fringiest one out there for the entire year.
This could be huge.
That's right. Could be huge.
This is a battle of the mad titans.
That's one way to put it. So we'll be looking at that at the bottom of the hour. And right now, what I'd like to do is, you know, I know a lot of you are like me. You work a full-time job for a living. And as the year has gone on, you may have missed out on some of the newspapers or the evening news. So here at the end of 2008, we want to catch you up on the year's hottest news topics with
The Year in 3 minutes.
America elects its first minority president.
We are and always will be the United States of America.
But not without drama on the Democratic side.
In 2006, 2 years ago, I made a very serious mistake.
I'm going to do everything I can to seat the Florida delegates at the convention.
And some idiocy from the Republican side.
What is it exactly that the VP does every day?
My view is we had a double Guantanamo.
If they want a president who doesn't believe in God, there's probably plenty of choices.
I don't think Americans are concerned if we're there for 100 years or 1,000 years or 10,000 years.
Gas prices rose to unthinkable heights in the summer.
Oil, that is. Black gold. Texas tea.
Only to crash to half its value by year's end.
It's a Festivus miracle!
Kinda like the stock market.
Tell me how my stocks did yesterday.
The White House spied on you without a warrant.
A wiretap requires a court order.
So Congress let the phone companies get away with it.
He is President of the United States, not King of the United States.
The Justice Department okayed torture.
Any activity we conduct is within the law. We do not torture.
So Congress investigated steroids in baseball.
If I'm guilty of anything, it is of being too trusting of everyone, wanting to see the best in everyone, being too nice to everyone.
George W. Bush continued his occupation of Iraq.
Our men and women in uniform and their families deserve better than this.
So the Democratic leadership gives him all the funding he wants with no strings attached.
The day of the blank check for the president in war is over.
Scooter Libby gets no prison time for outing a CIA agent.
Louis Libby was held accountable.
But O.J. Simpson goes to prison over sports memorabilia.
Like you can steal my yourself. Don't let nobody out of here.
And one out of 99 Americans not in the Bush administration are in prison. Contractors in Iraq murdered innocents, electrocuted our troops, and raped our women. Gay people get the right to marry in California.
I would like to say right now, for the first time, I am announcing I am getting married.
Until the Mormons help to strip those rights away with Prop 8.
My sins are perfectly acceptable. Your sins are hideous and evil.
Voters nationwide liberalized marijuana laws.
But isn't marijuana or dope illegal?
Only for those who enjoy it. Medical use of marijuana is legal in this state.
A married Democratic governor is caught with a hooker and loses his job.
There is much more to be done, and I cannot allow my private failings to disrupt the people's work.
While a married Republican senator is caught with a hooker and keeps his job.
Marriage, church, and how important they are in terms of influencing good behavior and bad behavior.
The housing bubble bursts and the economy collapses. So we rush to help the crooked bankers.
Greed is good. Greed is right.
And
greed works.
And that's 2008 in 3 minutes.
Phew.
Not bad, eh?
I'm very impressed.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to finish, to fit in there for 180 seconds. It was quite the year here in 2008. And of course, what we're looking forward to now is the end of the Bush administration. Boy, people can't wait for George W. Bush to be gone from office. We're all looking forward to the inauguration on January 20th of President Barack Obama. But this has generated a little bit of controversy. Of course, last week we touched on this a little bit, and that is the selection of Pastor Rick Cracker Barrel Warren as the invocation speaker for the inauguration. This has gotten a lot of heat from the gay and lesbian community, as well as those of us on the left who support our gay and lesbian brothers. For Pastor Rick Warren has some pretty sad things to say about gay rights. We'll be talking about that in our big story coming up next. But looking back here at Bush, and I just saw this most recent opinion poll from CNN, saying how all of us just can't wait for Bush to be gone. And this new opinion poll is confirming that. According to this CNN Opinion Research Corporation poll, they find that 75% of Americans, 3 out of 4, are glad that President Bush is leaving office. Just 23% indicated that they will miss him. Who are these people? Who is this 1 out of 4 people that are going to miss President Bush? That's just amazing to me. Now, note that
did you see the rest of that article?
No,
there's this very interesting thing. 4 out of 4 people in the rest of the world are glad to see him gone.
4 out of 4, really?
100% of the rest of the world will be glad to see him go.
Even Putin?
Oh yeah, even Putin. Yeah, he doesn't want him looking into his eyes anymore. He thinks it's creepy.
Probably is a little creepy.
What is wrong with him?
Now, when Clinton left office, we got to remember about 45% of the people said that they would miss Bill Clinton when he left. So, 45% would miss Clinton. Only 23% are going to miss Bush. And 28% of the people surveyed by CNN said that they believe that George W. Bush is the worst president ever. And I got to go along with Chris Rock on this one from his recent special. Not only is George W. Bush the worst president of the United States ever, he's the worst president of anything ever. President of the PTA, president of the chess club, whatever you want to call it, the worst leader ever. And of course, Bush is out on his legacy tour right now, trying to burnish up his legacy, and they're doing all sorts of whitewashing of his history in office. We're going to expose that through the rest of today's show. Also, we want to remind you, if you're going to be listening to the radio on Wednesday morning, you'll want to tune in to the Bill Press Show, because I will be sitting in for Bill Press on his show, which airs 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. in Washington, D.C., and is syndicated all around the country. So check your local listings. Check out the BillPressShow.com to find out what station you can hear me on and what time, because I'll be there New Year's Eve day. And be there with Stevie, as a matter of fact, and we'll be counting down 2008.
We will be there.
All right. Well, we got to take a little break here, pay some bills. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Pastor Rick Warren and taking your calls at 888-7-RADICAL.
Agent Double R7, running surveillance on Red Wing Radio so you don't have to. It's messy. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the show. It's 21 after the hour, and I'm feeling a little blue here these days. Yes, it's all sports-related, I must confess. My beloved Green Bay Packers lost in overtime on Monday to the Bears, a game they should have won. And my beloved Boise State Broncos lost their undefeated season. They lost their bowl game by 1 point on Tuesday. So it's not been a good week for me sports-wise. Coming up this weekend, of course, in the NFL, some big games as far as the playoffs go. And the 0-15 Detroit Lions, the worst team in NFL history, play my Green Bay Packers. Please, Packers, please, oh, please do not lose to the 0-15 Lions. Please do something for me this year. Please. All right, now that I got my pleading out of the way, let's get to the big story.
Now it's time for the big story.
My, what a big story.
Thanks. Now here's Radical Russ.
That's right, our big story is the upcoming inauguration of President-elect Barack Obama, and most particularly his selection of Pastor Rick Warren to give the invocation. This has generated a lot of controversy, and we talked a little bit about it last week, but I want to continue the talk a little bit today because I am fired up about this. I am really, really upset at Barack Obama for this selection. Now, there's been a lot of discussion about this, and I've heard both sides of this issue. I've heard people saying that Barack Obama is reaching out, that this is a brilliant masterstroke because Barack Obama campaigned as being a uniter, campaigned as someone who could bring us all together, who would talk to all sides on a particular issue. And I'm for that. I'm all for that. I am all for bringing people together, even people we disagree with, to find common ground and make this country a better place. However, there is a difference between talking to someone, between bringing someone to the table and validating their views and promoting their views. Now, Barack Obama himself has come out and said he is not in favor of gay marriage. He believes that marriage is between one penis and one vagina, like they always say, you know, one man, one woman. God's one penis at the altar requirement. And I've got my problems with Obama's stance on that as well. And it just comes back down to the idea of Christian supremacy. This is something I've been talking about on the show for almost 2 years now. It's not so much a problem with the Christian religion or people that follow the Christian religion. Most people out there that follow the Christian religion do so fairly innocuously. I mean, they don't hurt anyone else in their beliefs, in that they go to church, they believe what they believe, and they generally obey the golden rule. They treat others as they would have themselves be treated and so on. The people I'm talking to right now are the ones that I call the hypocristian evangelicals, the ones who have their nose so far up the Bible they've completely lost track of reality. And this would apply to Rick Warren. People out there, they don't understand that this Rick Warren guy is the worst kind of these preacher types, the worst kind of these hateful homophobes. And the reason why is because he comes off with this cuddly exterior, this cuddly, warm, sharing and caring type of exterior. And he's broken with the mainstream evangelical movement on a few items, like on global warming. He's been strong on getting the evangelicals to understand that global warming is a problem we need to do something about. And he's been really strong about helping the dilemma, the epidemic of AIDS in Africa. And that's another thing that bothers me about this Rick Warren, is bringing up his helping of people with AIDS in Africa as if that's some sort of way of validating that he's not a homophobe. And he said this a couple times. He's laughed at the idea that he's a homophobe. First of all, let's get rid of that word. I don't like the word homophobe. I've never thought it's an accurate word to describe the condition of hating gay people. I don't think it's right, because homophobe, you know, phobia brings up the idea of fear, irrational fear, and it is, and it's an irrational fear of gays. But homophobe makes it sound like, oh, shriek, run, we got to run away from the gays. It's not that. The more proper term for this would be called homobigotry, and that's a term I prefer. It's not a matter of hating the gays. It's not a matter of liking the gays. It's a matter of treating gay people differently than everyone else. Now, Rick Warren and his supporters will come across and they'll say, well, marriage has always been one man, one woman. It's a cultural thing. We don't want to change what we've done for 5,000 years. I mean, we'd heard this from Huckabee. We hear this from Romney. We hear this from Rick Warren. All these guys that want to support fighting against gay rights always say that it's a unchanging institution of marriage. And last week, I think I did a pretty good job of shooting that down. I mean, marriage has only very recently been a one man, one woman thing. Mostly it was a property arrangement, and most of your religions enjoyed polygamy and polygyny. So you can't tell me that it's an all time, you know, for ever since mankind, an unchanging institution. It's just not. But the real reason here, the real reason behind these people fighting against gay marriage is Christian supremacy. It's the idea that the Judeo-Christian way of life and the Judeo-Christian way of looking at things and Judeo-Christian morality should be superior to all others in this country. It's this idea that, and you've heard it many times from these people, we're a Christian nation, so-called here. That's their idea. It's about Christian dominion. It's about making the United States a Christian nation and forcing us all to live as the Judeo-Christian ethics would approve of. Now, they've got some points as far as saying that, you know, all of our founding fathers and our history is littered with all sorts of references to God and the Creator and providence and so on. And that's true. And our founding fathers were very religious men, most of them, and a lot of them did pray. That's true as well. But the genius of this country is separation of church and state and the idea that this is a country for all the people, Judeo-Christian people, Muslim people, atheist people, Baha'i, agnostics, pagans, Wiccans, whatever. And the minute that we start elevating Judeo-Christian ethics and mores above that of the society, that's the time we start telling all the rest of the religions to get in the back of the bus. So this fight against gay marriage has very, very little to do with the marriage itself and very little to do with the gays itself, really. It all has to do with Christian supremacy. Now, I want to continue on that theme here as we go on to our next break, but I'd also like to talk to you a little bit about it. So if you've got your opinions on this, give me a call at 888-7-RADICAL. That's 888-772-3422. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Don't touch that dial. We're right back to Radical Russ in just a few minutes. Hey, does anybody really have a dial anymore? You're listening to The Russ Belville Show. This ain't no Hannity's America. Here we still believe in the Constitution. You're listening to Radical Russ.
Talking about the Constitution and people's rights, and most specifically, the right of marriage, and how Pastor Rick Cracker Barrel Warren does not support that. Yes, he's going to be giving the invocation at Barack Obama's inauguration. This man who has publicly compared gay marriage to incest and pedophilia. So, yeah, that's what I'm talking about right now. And I was talking about how this is one of the manifestations of Christian supremacy in this country. And it expands itself into many different arenas. We're going to talk about a few of them here on today's show. But regarding this Christian supremacy thing here, and again, if you've got an opinion on this, just give us a call at 888-7-RADICAL. I'll entertain all opinions on this one. That's fine with me. But this Christian supremacy thing, the thing about the gay marriage is it's not so much a religious argument. It's not so much a civil argument here. What it is for these people is it's as if the government, by recognizing gay marriage, will be saying to their kids, it's okay if you're gay. That's really what it comes down to, is for these people. They're not, I really don't think they're upset about, well, they are, but I don't think that they're really concentrating on those other gay guys that are getting married or those other lesbians that are getting married. It's the idea that the state says it's okay to be gay or lesbian, and that's going to filter down to their kids, and it's going to turn them gay. That's what I really think is on their minds here. But let's find out what's on your minds. The phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL. We're going to go down to Dallas, Texas, and we've got Thomas on the line. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Hello, Russ. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. Listen, Russ, I was listening to the points you were making, and I would say that maybe instead of attacking Christianity, which is so beautiful, I think it's the people who we've allowed to reign supreme over how we live our lives. And I think that they've had a form of godliness, but no real power. See, the Bible says through love and kindness have I drawn them. So I don't have a problem with what people choose and do. I think, but the love that we have that's exemplified through our Christian walk allows us to tolerate people and their differences. But the people who have said this and who put it out there and it shouldn't be this and that, those people are hypocrites, Russ.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
Pharisees, if you will. So I think Christianity is beautiful in and of itself, and I think all Democrats are Christians. But the Republicans, in my opinion, and I know that's stereotypical, are not. They just put on a form of godliness, and I think they've been so successful in telling us that they are, and all of their policies, just, it's nothing Jesus would do. Absolutely nothing.
Hey, Thomas, I got to give you the nail on the head award for this one. Absolutely. You have nailed it. It's not the religion. And this is what we've been saying about the Muslim religion, too. It's not the religion. It's the people that practice it. Now, we've been defending Barack Obama throughout the campaign on his Christian religion because the right wing attacked him, you know, said he was a closet Muslim or whatever. So right. So what is a good Christian? I'm going to assume what is a good Christian like Barack Obama doing, inviting one of these Pharisee types to give his invocation?
That's true, because I think you let the wheat and the tare grow together, and in the end, God will do the separating. In other words, you come out from among them and be ye separate, but it's through kindness that you heap coals of fire upon the enemies, upon the heads of your enemy. In other words, you don't set people here, there, and everywhere. You love everybody. That's what you do. And like I say, I could live with the Rick Warren guy. I really didn't care that much for that, but I could really deal with that. It's just so much of what has been practiced and what we've been told for the longest about the Republicans being the Christian base and the evangelical base. I don't trust none of those people over there, because when you can't tell me you love me and then it won't feed me. You can't tell me you love me and won't reach out to me and help me, and you're condemning me all the time when God said I came not into the world to condemn the world, but that through me the world might be saved. So you just can't tell me anything. But when when you don't stand for anything, you just fall for anything. And then we got a media out there that's not really putting it out there the way it needs to be put out there. They'll beat Barack over the head for any little thing, in my opinion, but nobody got George Bush when he was trying to take us into this mess that we are in now. So I think we've been raising the wrong issues or focused on the wrong issues the whole time. But I love them. Now, I'm no more for the marriage side of it than the Republicans saying they're not. But the thing about it is I don't have any real estate in heaven or in hell. So I can't put anybody anywhere. I'll let God do that. But if I needed my life saved, and it's one of them that's going to be able to do it, I'd gladly embrace them.
I think that's a good sentiment, Thomas. Thank you for your call. I appreciate that opinion. I wish there were more opinions like yours out there in the Christian community that was more to the idea of let God do the judging and let's not try to do the judging ourselves. I think that's a good thing to point out. Coming back to this, though, I want to talk about this from a political standpoint rather than a religious standpoint, is in what is it that Obama figures to gain from this? I mean, one of the things we can all say here, I think we can all agree, even on the right, we can agree that Barack Obama's a brilliant politician. So is this just calculus? Is this just him weighing both sides and saying, well, I can get a little good, I can curry a little favor here with the evangelical side if I bring this Rick Warren guy in. If I let him bash the gays a little bit, maybe I can get a little cred with the red states. And then maybe on the other side, he's weighing it and saying, well, you know, I know the gays and lesbians are going to be really angry, but there's not a whole lot of them. And, you know, who are they going to vote for anyway? What, are they going to go to the Republicans? Is that all this comes down to, is just sheer political calculation? And if so, I'm kind of disappointed in Barack Obama for that. If I wanted a president who could triangulate with the right and curry favor with the evangelicals, I'd have put Bill Clinton back in the office. I'm looking for something different, you know, that change we can believe in. I'm looking for a president who will take seriously our Constitution and our separation of church and state, or at least what's supposed to be a separation of church and state. The thing to me that is kind of shocking, and probably not shocking to a lot of people, but it is to me as an atheist, is that the discussion is who should be giving the prayer rather than should we be having a prayer at an official state function in the first place. I am in the huge minority on this one. I know it. I know I am. Those of us who are agnostic, atheist, or just unbelievers, we always get kicked to the curb on this one. The Supreme Court decided long ago there's this such a thing as a ceremonial deism. This idea that, well, since America had all sorts of religious nuts in its history and all these people who believed in religion in its history, then because of historical reasons, we have to ceremonially represent God in our events, in our, you know, our prayers before the Senate, in our in God we trust in our money, in One Nation Under God in our Pledge of Allegiance. And I know I'm in a huge minority in this, but I really think we should be getting rid of those things. I'm not talking about eliminating God. I mean, I'm talking about eliminating God in the public sphere as far as our public secular world goes. Because the problem with putting God into all of these things, see, America was founded as a democracy, a representational republic, so that we could all discuss issues with each other and bring facts and reason to the table and shout and debate about it and finally have a majority vote and go with what is the right way to go for our country, democracy-wise. The problem with bringing God into it is that we can't debate. Once you bring God into the equation, the debate is over. If you say, God said so, what's my answer? No, he didn't. no, sir. That's why we need to get God out of all of this stuff, is because it inflames too many people's passions and it takes us away from solving our problems with reason and logic. I know I'm in the minority. I know I'm in the minority in it, so I'll just bite the bullet and we'll be stuck with preachers giving prayers at government official events. I guess we're stuck with it, but if we had my way, there'd be no Rick Warren or Pastor Lowry. There'd be no preachers on stage. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. We're going to take off early here just a second here, get to some commercials, because we've got our Lunatic Fringe Awards for the year, the all-time 2008 winners. Stay tuned and find out who was the biggest lunatic fringer. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back. It's 48 after the hour. It's our last show of 2008, and it's our last segment of the first hour, and that can only mean one thing.
The lunatic is on the grass.
Now it's time for our annual roundup of the right wing's altered reality. From the Guano Loco Neocon Chicken Hawks to the hypocritical American Taliban and the cable news punditocracy, the Russ Belville Show presents the Lunatic Fringer of 2008 Award, an award dedicated to the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quote of the year. That's right, a full year worth of lunatic fringery all condensed down to one radio segment. Let's get right to it. In fifth place for our Lunatic Fringe Awards this year, let's see, where is he at? No, no, not him. All right, there we go. Fifth place, Sean Hannity, for not having the ability to hear talk radio. That's right. Sean Hannity wins for not hearing talk radio. This is Sean Hannity talking about the issue of Barack Obama's race during the campaign.
But I think they made a real tactical mistake here by playing the race card the way they did. You know, when Obama says they're going to scare Americans by saying he doesn't look like all those presidents on dollar bills, he can't mean anything other than race. In fact, Obama tipped his hand when he said it back in June. Oh, and did I mention he's black? Obama can't point to a single instance in which President Bush or McCain or Karl Rove or Sean Hannity or talk radio or any other major Republican has made an issue of Obama's race.
Cannot point to a single instance where people on talk radio made an issue of Barack Obama's race. Ready, go!
He's colorless.
Shred of African-American blood. He's Arab.
Gene, did it surprise you that he was so unethnic tonight?
If Barack Obama were Caucasian.
He's an Afro-Leninist, and I know he's dangerous.
He is a stereotype African-American.
You're sticking with Obama because he's...
He's
a brother!
You can't criticize the little black man child.
Can Obama now win over the regular folks, white folks?
I fear that Obama will stir up a race war.
The only reason that he is in is because he talks, acts, and carries himself as a Caucasian.
Can you imagine if I said, is Barack Obama black enough?
Hey, Barack Obama has picked up another endorsement. African-American actress Halle Berry.
And I don't want to go on a lynching party against Michelle Obama unless...
We're talking to a hunky Whitesville.
To Barack Obama, the son of a black man from Kenya and a white man from Kansas.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite one right at there at the end.
Brilliant.
So Sean Hannity, fifth place for not listening to talk radio for an entire year, apparently, because he missed all those comments.
I'm mildly surprised that he didn't come in higher there. That's a poor showing from Sean there.
Yeah.
Also, did you notice, if you listen really carefully, maybe you need headphones on for this, but there's a little, one of those clips right at the beginning there, and it's a Rush clip.
Yes.
And if you listen really closely, he may just be moving around in his chair, but I swear you can hear him fart.
Would it be this one?
If Barack Obama were Caucasian.
That's the one.
That's the one. Yeah, that's a special honorary mention for Rush Limbaugh's butt. All right, let's go to fourth place here. Fourth place for the Lunatic Fringe Award of the year is Bill O'Reilly. That's right, Bill O'Reilly,
wow,
for his ability to bald-faced lie to the American people. Here's four lies in rapid succession.
If you're going to change the definition of marriage for gays, then you have to change it across the board.
You could just say between two people.
You can't. Not under equal protection.
Equal protection means that if we do gay marriage, you'll also have to have polygamy and pedophilia.
When Katrina hit, none of the oil rigs spilled in Louisiana.
None of the oil rigs spilled after Katrina, other than the 100,000 gallons that were spilled after Katrina.
Now, Abu Ghraib was pathetic. It was awful. No one should justify that, ever. But nobody died, okay?
Nobody died at Abu Ghraib, except for the three or four people who died. And finally, Bill O'Reilly says,
you know where there's a veteran sleeping under a bridge. You call me immediately, and we will make sure that man does not do it.
That's because no veterans are sleeping under bridges, according to Bill O'Reilly. So you are our fourth place winner. Now, for our third place winners, also taking the title of Rookies of the Year, It's Quinn and Rose. That's right. Jim Quinn.
Quinn
with two N's. And Rose Tennant.
Just playing through. Quinn.
That's right. Quinn and Rose, the morning show for conservatives who are scared of everything.
Gay sex produces AIDS. They should charge homosexuals more for their health insurance than they charge the rest of us. How's that different from welfare? You get a free house, you get free food, and you get rewarded for having children. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second. There is a difference. The slave had to work for it.
I don't think you can be a Christian and vote for Barack Obama.
To this infomercial last night where the devil was coming into my house.
Uh-huh. And the only thing I can agree with Jim Quinn...
Don't talk.
That's right. Don't talk. Shut up, bitch.
All right, so that's Quinn and Rose, hey, our third-place winners.
That's a very good showing for them this year. They really came from behind with some crazy, crazy stuff.
Nutty.
Coming
absolutely
third.
Nutty.
I'd call them the Cinderella story of mentals.
There you go. That's a good way to put it. All right, number two, our runner-up. And just in case our lunatic fringer becomes ill or incapacitated and is unable to fulfill his duties as the lunatic fringer of the year, the runner-up will be taking his place... Our runner-up for Lunatic Fringer of the Year is Michael Wiener Savage for his pure, unadulterated, foaming-at-the-mouth lunatic fringery.
The children's minds are being raped by the homosexual mafia. That's my position. America's being overrun by an invasion force from Mexico that'll soon take over the country. The only way to stop this is to throw out all the politicians immediately and then throw out the anchor babies. Well, socially, we're far worse, more degenerate than Weimar Germany. Now the illness du jour is autism. You know what autism is? I'll tell you what autism is in 99% of the cases. It's a brat who hasn't been told to cut the act out.
That's right. Michael Savage got a lot of heat for that comment on autism and tried to defend it later on, saying, oh, you took it out of context. Not exactly sure how brats not getting smacked around enough is out of context, but...
Speaking of smacked around, he is the heavy hitter of craziness.
Oh, yes.
I'd say he's like the George Foreman, but I don't want to disrespect George Foreman. And besides, Michael Savage thinks the colored people smell funny.
Yeah, exactly. So Michael Savage is our second place finisher. He's our runner-up in the 2008 Lunatic Fringe. So who could it be? Who could be our winner? The most lunatic of the lunatic fringe, the craziest of the craziest, the most radical of the right wing, our winner, Pastor Rick Cracker Barrel Warren.
Hey. Yay!
What do you know? That's right. It might be kind of a surprise because you'd think that a lot of those lunatic fringers out there said some pretty crazy stuff, and Rick Warren's not that crazy. I mean, he only compared gay people getting marriage to pedophilia.
I'm opposed to having a brother and sister be together and call that marriage. I'm opposed to an older guy marrying a child and calling that a marriage. I'm opposed to one guy having multiple wives and calling that marriage.
Do you think those are equivalent to gays getting married?
Oh, I do.
They're absolutely equivalent. Nothing different than gays getting married than a man marrying a child or a brother marrying a sister. That's the way the... prayer at the invocation sayer, the pastor who's going to preach at the first minute of the Barack Obama administration, that's his opinion on gay and lesbian Americans. So, Rick Cracker Barrel Warren, for being so smooth that your fringery gets a place of honor at the inauguration, you're the winner of the 2008 of the Year Award. I mean, it really is something, don't you think? That someone could come out and say these kind of things. And it's not just Warren against the gay folks either. I mean, he had a woman come up to him at one of his events and asked him, you know, straight up, you know, said that she was Jewish and whether or not, since she's Jewish, is she going to go to hell? And he said straight up to her face, yes, you're going to hell. So here's a guy who thinks all Jews and non-Christians are so awful that their creator who loves them is going to banish them to eternal hell and torment, and yet he's given a place of honor at the invocation. I'm Radical Russ. We'll be right back with another hour of the Russ Belville Show. Please stick around, and the phone number, 888-7-RADICAL.
live and direct from the free speech zone called America. The weekend home for truly radical progressives. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ.
Good day and welcome to the weekend, hour two of the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives, where we've got 5 hours worth of show and only 120 minutes to say it all. So hang on tight, strap yourself in. We got one more hour of talk in 2008. We're also taking your calls at 888-7-RADICAL. That's 888-772-3422. We're looking back at 2008, looking back at all the events that have taken place, and looking forward to 2009 and the inauguration of President Barack Obama. Unfortunately, that inauguration is going to be marred somewhat by the appearance of Pastor Rick Cracker Barrel Warren at the inauguration, giving the invocation. You might wonder why I'm calling him Pastor Cracker Barrel Warren here. I've decided that's his new nickname here on the show, Pastor Cracker Barrel, because if you remember, the Cracker Barrel restaurant a few years back had a lawsuit by a lesbian employee who was fired for being lesbian, and the Cracker Barrel company wouldn't back down on that. So I figured it was kind of appropriate they should be in league together, Pastor Warren and Cracker Barrel. And also because, well, Pastor Warren, if you've seen him, is, well, it looks like he's been eating the Cracker Barrel. A little bit pudgy, that fella. It's always funny to me, a preacher that tells me you can pray away the gay when he can't even pray away the donuts. But,
Mark, Luke, and John work that flab until it's gone.
And that's our own Stevie Webb there answering the phones at 888-7-RADICAL. How you doing, Stevie?
Very well, thank you, Double R. How are you?
I'm great, and we're getting ready here to guest host on the Bill Press Show coming up this Wednesday, as a matter
yes.
of fact. Check out BillPressShow.com for the stations and the times. It airs live 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the East Coast, Washington, D.C., and other times elsewhere across the country. So, again, check BillPressShow.com. We're going to be sitting in for 3 hours on New Year's Eve Day. That
they
is December 31st.
What hit 'em.
That's right. I'm
really
sitting
won't.
In the very last Bill Press Show of 2008, so it should be fun. Now, I want to get back to this subject of Rick Warren specifically, but also in general, this notion of Christian supremacy.
Freedom requires religion, just as religion requires freedom.
I have opponents in this race who do not want to change the Constitution, but I believe it's a lot easier to change the Constitution than it would be to change the Word of the living God, and that's what we need to do, is to amend the Constitution so it's in God's standards rather than try to change God's standards so it lines up with some contemporary view of how we treat each other and how we treat the family.
So this is the Christian supremacy movement in this country, headed up by Rick Warren, who's trying to take the place of Jerry Falwell, I imagine, or Dobson, or one of those other guys. And this is a serious thing to consider. One of the famous quotes that I see on liberal cars all the time on a bumper sticker is that quote from, I think it's Sinclair Lewis, who said when fascism comes to America, it will be carrying the cross and draped in a flag, something like that. And that's what I'm really afraid of here over the last, well, 30 years or so, is this slow creep of the Christian right over our discourse here in America. And nowhere is that more clear than in the discourse against gay marriage. There's really no logical civil reason not to allow loving gay couples to get married. There just isn't. There's no real good reason for it. They try, and it's really fun to watch these religious folks try to argue against gay marriage using secular language, right? Because really what they want to come down and say is God said it's icky. That's the real reason. God says it's icky. Gays are icky. God says it's icky. But when they can't argue the God angle, they try to argue all these different angles. Like they try to say that marriage has always been one man, one woman throughout history, which it hasn't. Marriage has been a property arrangement. Marriage has been a political arrangement. Marriage has been one man, many women. Marriage has been purchased. Marriage has been between young people and older people. There's been a lot of changes to marriage throughout history. Another angle they try to come up with is, well, the state has an interest in promoting the procreation of children. Well, that's not a very logical argument either, because they allowed me to get married, and my marriage is an infertile marriage. We can't naturally have children. So why are we allowed to get married? They'll say that the marriage is there to protect the nuclear family. Well, there's all sorts of families now. There's families that are single-parent families. There's families that are adoptive families. The country has changed, and unfortunately, the Bible hasn't. So they're having a little trouble reconciling that. But let me bring you to another instance here of this Christian supremacy in America and the detrimental effects that it has on all of us. And this is a new rule that the Bush administration slipped in when no one was looking here about women's health. And it's this thing called, you may have heard me mention it before, this thing called the Conscience Clause. What this is George Bush, the administration, has issued one of these last-minute regulations that says that healthcare workers are protected in their rights of conscience. And what that means is, if any federal healthcare official feels it's against their personal, religious, or moral values to provide services to you, then they don't have to. Now, some people will naturally take this to the extreme of abortion. They'll say, well, a doctor shouldn't have to perform an abortion if he doesn't want to. Well, that's always been the case. That's already the case, right? We're not talking about that. There's certainly a case to be made to say that if someone has a moral problem performing an abortion, they shouldn't be forced to do it. I'm all for that, completely for that. That's not what this is talking about. This is talking about any service that they feel a personal, religious, or moral problem with. So we are not talking just about abortion. We could be talking about artificial insemination. We could be talking about giving out birth control. Suppose that a lesbian couple goes to an artificial insemination, a fertility clinic, and the fertility clinic can just turn to them and say, no, you're gay, get out, we don't want to help you. Because if they get federal funds, according to this rule, they're not going to have to. What about women that have been raped? A woman who has been raped and needs emergency contraception. Well, if they happen to go to one of those Sarah Palin-type hospitals where they don't believe in giving women their rights, then she just might be out of luck and have to try to find another hospital. It's ridiculous. Let's go to the phones and talk about this Christian supremacy movement. We got a caller on the line, Tim in Detroit. Tim, welcome to the show.
Great show.
Thank you, sir.
I'd like to talk about what I call sort of the battle between secularism and monotheism.
Okay.
And, obviously, if you look at the Constitution, if you look at what the Founding Fathers, irrespective of what they themselves believed personally, put forth was that we are a secular country. That doesn't mean that the individual cannot believe
right. In
whatever religion they want. In fact, the First Amendment guarantees that. But the American flag, the American Constitution, the American body politic, the America as we know it as a nation is a secular country, and I think that's often lost in the media. I think that's often lost in our discussions.
Yeah, Tim, I'd also argue that if America wasn't a secular country, you couldn't believe what you wanted to believe.
Absolutely. For example, if you had some sort of a state religion, as you have in Europe, as you have in many countries throughout the world, then those religious minorities are often highly persecuted and often, outright killed. So we have to take back this notion that America somehow is a religious nation.
Mm-hmm.
Culturally speaking, constitutionally speaking, it's a secular country, and that's not to deny anybody's religious freedom. But it's to promote the idea that democracy can only exist, in my opinion, as being a secular democracy.
I agree. And we can only go back to the 1797, the Treaty of Tripoli. We were engaged in a war with Muslim extremists, terrorists of their time in the Barbary Coast.
We signed
a treaty with them, the Treaty of Tripoli, that stated in its Article 11, most specifically, that the United States is in no way founded as a Christian nation. That treaty was ratified by the entire Senate unanimously and signed by the fourth president. So those are pretty founding fathers of us, don't you think? And they all unanimously agreed we're not a Christian nation.
And as I understand American history, I think for most of the 19th century, and I think even up to the 20th, there was that sort of general consensus that everyone could believe whatever they wanted, but we all as Americans, we lived sort of in a secular context. And I think with the rise of the fundamentalist Christians in the 50s and so on, mm-hmm. I think that argument will really shifted. So now everyone, even in the Democratic Party now, has to explain how religious they are, and I think we need to take that away.
Yeah, well, it shifted in the 50s with the with that big Red Scare with the godless communists, yeah. And so that we wouldn't be them, we had to be more godly. And that's when they started putting the word God in the Pledge of Allegiance, and we got this right wing fomenting right about then. I think you nailed it there.
Absolutely, and you see this now with the whole Warren thing. You see this You know, and it's interesting how you brought up the word homophobia, and it's not even an accurate word. It's more of a sense of bigotry.
Yeah, homo-bigotry.
And even the, you know, gays being discriminated against is not even the whole point. It's more of a matter of, okay, we as fundamentalists, let's say, are going after people who want to challenge monotheism as the dominant cultural framework.
Yeah.
And I do challenge that. I mean, I think we need to really discuss secularism and say, look, you know, secularism does not exclude religion. It simply says that a democracy, if it's to be viable, needs to take the God context out of the state.
Yeah, we all have to agree to a similar platform upon which we can all argue that relies on reason and logic and doesn't rely on someone's holy book, because you can't argue the holy book.
Well, look at evolution, Russ, for example. I mean, there's this actual debate in the media whether evolution even should be taught along creationism.
And that's a subject we'll have to take up at another time, Tim. I appreciate your call, but I got to take a break here. Thank you for giving us a call. The phone number is 888-7-RADICAL. We're talking a little bit about Christian supremacy in general here and looking back at 2008. This is the Russ Belville Show. We'll be back in just a few.
Elitist. Just like any other dishwashing, burger flipping, public school educated, self-employed, bar band, musician, National Guardsman, he's Radical Russ.
Welcome back to the show. It's 22 after the hour. We're discussing the topic of Christian supremacy, specifically how it relates to God's one penis at the altar requirement for marriage. Yeah, that's what I like to call it, the one penis at the altar requirement, because there's a few cases that really illustrate how silly the gay marriage argument is, and a couple of them come from my home state here in Oregon. Here in Oregon, we had a man, and I'll just leave the names out for now, but we had a man who used to be a hockey announcer, a local minor league hockey team. And he was a hockey announcer, and at one point he realized, this man got married, right? Got married to a woman, so one man, one woman, they got married. But later on in this hockey announcer's life, he realized that he really felt like he was a woman trapped in a man's body. And he went forth and had the operation. He's now a post-operative transsexual woman. Their marriage is still legal. Their marriage is still legal in the state of Oregon. They are still receiving all the benefits of married people, even though it's one woman at this point, because he had a penis when he got married. So if that doesn't just illustrate how silly this whole thing is, I guess if gay people want to get married, one of them should just go have it chopped off, and then they can get married, and then everything will be okay, right? Let's go to the phones here and get your opinions on this. I want to go to Albion, Michigan, and Jerry is on the phone. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just find it frustrating in this whole argument when people refer to the country being founded as a Christian nation, when in fact, if they really study much history, many of the founding fathers were deists, or some of them even atheists, including Thomas Jefferson was a deist. Mm-hmm. And the people just make this assumption that they were all these big, you know, Christian people that were making rules and writing the Constitution that way when they were not. They were being very careful about what they were doing.
Oh, yeah. Jefferson, when he was writing the Constitution, specifically got into fights with Adams over this about the use of the word God or Jesus in the Constitution, and he wanted to go with the more neutral creator-type language. We also get, Jefferson's letters to the Danbury Baptist, where he talks about religion neither picks his pocket nor breaks his leg. We get the where he also specifies the firm wall between church and state. But regardless of that, Jerry, I mean, there were some founding fathers who were very strong Christian men. But my point is this, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what religion they were. Their goal was to set up a secular nation. There's no reason why a secular nation couldn't have been instituted by a bunch of Christians, don't you think?
That's true.
All right.
Yep, you're right.
Well, thanks, Jerry. Appreciate your call there. Let's get to another call here. We're going to go to Fort Bragg, and Mike is on the line. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Russ. Just had a question.
Sure.
Well, I see that not only you, but all left-wing talk show hosts are piling on Christianity, which is fine. That's what y'all do. However, have you read the Koran?
I have read parts of it. Go ahead.
I've read the whole thing twice.
Okay.
You know, an enraged Christian might vote.
Okay.
And try to work through the system. What have the enraged Muslims done to homosexuals in their countries?
Go on.
There's a lot of pushback in the U.S. right now from Muslims trying to get certain elements of their laws recognized here.
Okay, so, Mike, is your point that our bigots are better than their bigots?
My point is that y'all are going after the easy targets that don't push back.
You don't think Christians push back?
No.
Oh, really?
How?
Prop 8? Does Prop 8 sound like a pushback to you?
You mean voting?
You mean putting up money to take away the rights of people who already have them?
Hey, if you're voting and the vote is on your side... And
oh, cool. So you're in Fort Bragg, South Carolina. Let's have a vote on whether black people should go to the same schools as white people. Let's have a vote. Would that work for you?
I don't think it would go too far.
You don't think so?
No.
You don't think those deep red states with their high white populations would vote to have separate schools from the black people?
No. I think
let's get in a time machine. Let's get in a time machine and go back to 1950. How do you think the vote would turn out then?
Well, hey.
My point here, Mike, is do you think it's right to vote on people's rights?
You're creating a non-existent.
Do you think it is right to vote on people's rights?
You vote on it all the time. You vote on my right to keep and bear arms.
We voted on your right to keep and bear arms. When did that happen?
Yeah. North A in New Jersey, unfortunately stationed, they voted away my rights every year, a little more at a time. So, yes, they have voted on my rights, and they've taken away a little at a time.
Do you own a gun?
Yes, I do.
So how did we take your rights away, Mike?
Well, how did they take my rights away?
You still have a gun, don't you?
What kind of gun I have? Hey, you're saying what kind of religion and what kind of marriage is a problem?
No, I'm saying marriage is fabulous. I think marriage is a great institution. I think everybody should be able to get into it.
Well, hey, if you want to redefine it, fine.
No, I'm not redefining marriage.
It's redefining marriage.
I am defining marriage as two people who love each other, that take care of each other, and declare responsibility for each other until they die.
Well, that's a new definition, then.
It is?
Yeah.
You don't think that's the way heterosexual marriages are? Two people getting married to stay with each other and take care of each other till they die?
It might be. It certainly hasn't been the way it's been.
How has it been?
How has it been? 50% of marriages end in divorce. I don't think anything is forever.
That's actually not quite true. 50% of all marriages end in divorce.
Know,
If you look at just first marriages, about 75% of first marriages stay together, about 60% of second marriages, and about 40% of third marriages. So when you do the overall math, it is 50% of marriages that fail, but not first marriages. But you still answer me whether or not it's right to vote on people's rights.
We vote on people's rights all the time.
So you think it's okay?
I don't think it's... Unfortunately, if you're going to vote on some rights, you might as well be able to vote on all of them.
So you don't think people should be able to vote against gay marriage, then?
If you libs would stand up and stand for my Second Amendment rights, I'd sure as heck stand for some of y'all.
Wait a minute. Who's this you libs, Tonto?
You libs?
Hold on. I'm originally from Boise, Idaho. My entire family lives in rural Idaho. They have all hunted. I hunted when I was a kid. I've owned guns before. Don't say you libs. I'm all for your Second Amendment rights.
Well, great. I'm glad you are. You're the only one on Air America who is.
No, there's lots of us. Ed Schultz on the Jones Radio is a very strong Second Amendment proponent.
I listened to him all through the campaign. He had shill gun organizations on the whole time.
I see. Now, but let's get away from this gun thing. Let's go back to the gay thing, because I'm really fascinated in your views on this. But unfortunately, I'm running out of time. I've got a minute left. So let me give you another 30 seconds, and you just say what you got to say.
Look, it does me no never mind, but I originally called about you piling on Christianity versus Islam. I personally don't care one way or another. As you said, Jefferson does not pick my pocket or break my leg. But all I'm saying is I think that going after Christianity as opposed to other religions that might behead gays is a little disingenuous.
Okay, well, thanks for your opinion. I'll talk about a little of that after the break. Thanks for giving us a call. This is the Russ Belville Show. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't touch that dial. We're right back to Radical Russ in just a few minutes. Hey, does anybody really have a dial anymore? No. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show. Russ Belville Show is made possible by the prolonged pleading of Mrs. Belville and the support of listeners like you.
There are some who call me Tim.
No, no, they call me Radical Russ. That's what they call me. I'm your host. Glad to be back here. 35 after the hour. We just got done speaking with Mike from Fort Bragg, South Carolina, and I'm still trying to wrap my mind around some of these concepts, so I'll do my best, and it's not my policy to trash someone when they're not on the phone to defend themselves, so I'm not going to do that. Don't worry, Mike, if you're still listening. I appreciate you calling in. In fact, I really appreciate all the conservatives and people that don't disagree with me that call in, because that's the only way I ever learn anything is by arguing with people about it, and I think we should be doing more of it, more discussion, more talk. Phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL. But let me get to this point he kept making about us libs, you know, because I was just at the official left-wing vast conspiracy meeting the other day when we were talking about how we could possibly take away everyone's guns. that's one of the funniest things to me. And I heard this a lot growing up in Idaho, right? You know, that was always the problem with Democrats. They're coming to take our guns. The Democrats are going to take our guns away, which is ironic. In 2008, considering that the Supreme Court this year, for the first time, ruled on the personal right to keep and bear arms. In fact, you've got more rights today, Mike, than you did before. You actually have now, according to the Scalia Supreme Court there, you now have the individual right to bear arms, to keep and bear arms. And I was actually for that decision. I actually agree with that decision that struck down the D.C. handgun law. Because I do believe our citizens have a right to keep and bear arms. I do believe that. I come from a hunting background. My family hunts. Not me. I'm not into it much myself. I have better things to do than to kill animals. But I support people's right to do so. I support people's right to own weapons. And I believe that the reason the Founding Fathers put that in there is because, one, they had just dealt with an aggressive tyranny, right? And they had put together the revolution from a bunch of men, you know, just average men who happened to have guns. So I can see the logic there. But I also think it goes down to the bedrock principle of America, and that is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And if I can't defend my life, then I don't have much chance at pursuing happiness or having much liberty. So that's why I believe we have this right to bear arms. Where I think Mike was going with it, though, was things like the Clinton administration passing the assault weapons ban or the Violence Against Women Act that was later decreed to be unconstitutional. I think that's where he's going with that, because I haven't met anyone yet who can show me that a Democrat showed up and took their gun. That the actions of a Democrat caused someone to lose their legally licensed firearm. I have not ever heard of a case of that. If you know of a case of that, send it to me, radicalruss@gmail.com. I'll be glad to look it over. No one's coming to take your guns. Now, are we trying to maybe restrict you from being able to buy any old gun you want with no license or no identification at a gun show? Maybe. Yeah, maybe we want to do that. Are we trying to maybe have people be required to be trained in the safe use of their firearms? Maybe as much training as they get to say, oh, I don't know, drive a car? Yeah, maybe we might go for that. Are we of the idea that maybe getting a concealed weapons license should be at least as hard as getting a building permit? Would we go that far? Yeah, maybe. But the idea that people should have no weapons, that is not at all a liberal or progressive philosophy. Now, let me come back to the original subject. We were talking about Christian supremacy, and he said it was a little bit too easy of me to pick on Christian religion because, you know, the Muslims are out there beheading people, et cetera, whatever. Well, okay. The reason why, look, you want to have that argument, you win. They are worse than us. You win. Their bigots are worse than ours. Their bigots chop people's heads off, and our bigots just carry God hates fag signs. You're right. You're right. They're worse than we are. Congratulations. Yay. Christians are better than Muslims. The reason I go off on the Christianity, though, is because there's no Muslims out there that are trying to force me to live their religion. I don't have any Muslims knocking on my door every Saturday or Sunday trying to tell me the good word. I don't have Muslims all over my TV all the time asking for more money for Jesus because Jesus needs more cash for some reason. I don't have Muslim pastors standing up at Barack Obama's inauguration and being given the honor of that position based on their anti-gay views. That's why I go off against the Christians, is because the Christians are here. They're the ones that are affecting me. The Muslims aren't affecting me that much. They really aren't. They're not causing me that much problem. When this whole thing came down with 9/11, terrorism, Al-Qaeda, and all that, and people running around, oh, Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda, I tell you, I am not that afraid of Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda shows up, they might set off a bomb, might kill some people. But the Christian dominionists intend to take this country and destroy its very foundation. Their intent is to destroy the idea of secular law. Their idea is to institute their own form of Christian Sharia law in this country. That's why I go off on the Christian dominionists so much. That's why I bring it up so much. Now, some other points here with regard to the whole gay marriage argument, since we're talking about it, and this whole Rick Warren thing. I was telling you earlier about how God has this one penis at the altar rule, you know, only one penis at the altar. After you're married, you can chop it off, you can add one, doesn't matter, but, you know, at the altar, one penis per altar. One of Warren's things that he'll come back to defend himself here, Pastor Cracker Barrel, will defend himself by saying that he loves gay people. He loves them. He has friends who are gay. He has gay friends. He wishes the best for gay people. He wishes gay people had all the equal rights of everyone else. He has even said that he would support a sort of civil union where all gay people could have the exact same rights as married people, as long as we don't call it marriage. What, if not Christian supremacy, is that? If that is not the idea that I'm better than you are, my marriage is real, yours isn't real. I mean, it's childish to say, I will give you exactly the same rights as long as you don't call it the same thing. I know. Let's build some schools. Let's build one school for the black kids and one school for the white kids. As long as they're exactly alike, it'll be okay. Just don't call it the same thing. We'll call the white kids school school, and we'll call the black kids school civil education. How's that? How about water fountains? We have water fountains for white folks and water fountains for black folks that are exactly the same, except we'll call the white ones water fountains and we'll call the black ones civil fountains. How's that? Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about separate but equal. And since Brown versus Board of Education, it has been a fact, it has been a bedrock principle in this country that separate but equal is anything but. If it is a separate institution, it is by definition not equal. So this is their point. This is their point, is that the gays can't have the word marriage? Is that really what it comes down to? You're all for them having the rights of visiting people in the hospital, of adoption, of raising kids, of transferring property, of taking the names, of having shared bank accounts, credit accounts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You're all for that for gay people. Just don't call it marriage. Call it civil unions. Isn't that amazing? You know, I've always talked to my gay friends about this, and I say, you know what you ought to do just to be the burr under the right-wing saddle? Is to give in on that. Give in on the civil unions point. But on the civil unions point, as you're fighting for the exact same equal statutory language of marriage, but not calling it marriage, call it nairage with an N as in Nancy. Won't that bug the Christians? Call it nairage. Straight people can get married. Gay people can get nairied. Yeah, and so what's so fun about that will be when the Christian's little boy grows up and says he's going to get married, and he calls his parents and says, Mom, Dad, I'm going to get married. They'll have to stop and say, married or nairied? It's just a silly thought. It's just a silly thought. I, of course, don't really support that. I believe gay people deserve exactly the same rights as straight people, and we should be calling it marriage. And don't tell me that the Bible's got a problem with it. That's another thing. I always come back to this Bible thing. Oh, Leviticus, man shall not lie with man. It is an abomination. Yeah, these guys that are so into the abomination talk don't seem to be picketing the red lobsters. Because, you know, shellfish are an abomination. They don't seem to be picketing the Ross clothing stores, even though they sell clothing with mixed fibers, which is an abomination. And I haven't yet seen one of these right-wing Christian types put their wife out in the garage for a week every month because of their menstrual cycle that makes them unclean and they're not to be seen. Because, you know, that's an abomination. So many abominations, so little time. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. Our last segment of the year coming up in just a few minutes. We're going to be taking a look at your listener emails at radicalruss@gmail.com. Stay tuned.
Continue the conversation with Radical Russ online. Visit RadicalRuss.com and email RadicalRuss@gmail.com.
Oh, it's going to be so nice to have a president that believes in science.
Science.
Oh, Radical Russ back here enjoying the 80s once again. It's our last show of 2008. This is our last segment.
Hey, Russ.
Yes?
Your poetry in motion.
Oh, thank you so much.
Anytime. That's my New Year's present to you.
And that's why we get paid for talk radio and not singing.
True.
Sorry, but it is our last show, and I want to thank, most specifically, I want to thank Stevie Lee Webb for doing a fabulous job on the show, and supporting us and taking care of all the calls. It's a hard job. He's doing like two or three jobs all at once, so we appreciate it.
Thank you, Russ. It's always a pleasure, always a privilege, never a chore.
That's right. And this is the second year of the Russ Belville Show. We're our two-year anniversary is coming up here in April. So we want to thank all the listeners who've made this possible. Thanks for joining us here on XM Satellite or the terrestrial station near you. We really appreciate that. And in order for us to continue, I want to encourage you out there, if you got a business and you're looking for a place to advertise, advertise here on the Russ Belville Show. You can just send me an email at radicalruss@gmail.com. We'll get your advertisement played here on the show. And I'm telling you, advertising with liberal talk radio really works. There's a guy in our local area here in Portland, Oregon. His name's Tom Dwyer, and he runs this automotive shop, you know, a garage, basically. And he does great work out there, and he works really hard to make sure that it's, you know, environmentally friendly. He'll get you carbon offset credits and helps people with biodiesel and electric cars and all that. So I called this guy, you know, thinking, you know, maybe I could get him as an advertiser for the show or something. And so he invited me to come out and get my car fixed up and tuned up. And man, what a great job they did. It was just fabulous. And knowing that all the work being done there was helping to offset, you know, global warming and all that, fabulous. So you got one customer out of me right there from advertising on liberal talk radio. I'm sure there's a lot more out there that are listening. So if you're interested in advertising, please just send me an email, radicalruss@gmail.com, and we'll put out the good word for you. Now, a couple of things here before we leave and before we get to our spam segment with our listener email at radicalruss@gmail.com. I wanted to bring up this pardon of George W. Bush's. This has kind of slipped under the radar, and I was going to put it in the under the radar segment, but we got to talking. Bush has been giving out a lot of pardons, like presidents are wont to do toward the end of their administration. But what one pardon here has caused him a little bit of problems. He gave a pardon to this guy named Isaac Tusi. Now, this Isaac Tusi guy was a Brooklyn housing real estate developer, and he was accused of scamming hundreds of poor minority home buyers and got in criminal trouble for this. So Bush gave a pardon to this guy, to this predatory mortgage lender. Even in the middle of a recession, Bush is giving a pardon to one of the guys that helped create the housing problems that we've got, at least in Brooklyn. But here's where it gets a little weirder. First of all, there's a process that these pardons go through, and they get reviewed, and they're supposed to match certain guidelines by the Justice Department. Well, one of those guidelines is that you have to have served your sentence or completed your sentence at least 5 years ago. Well, this is a relatively recent development, so he didn't match that requirement of the five-year guideline. Then the pardon attorney, who's named Ronald Rogers, didn't actually recommend a pardon for this guy. Usually the pardons go up through the pardon attorney, and then he, you know, delivers them to George W. Bush to decide what he wants to do with them. Bush just did this on his own without the pardon attorney recommending it. I wonder why that could be. Well, when we dig a little farther, we find that Tusi's father, Robert, made his first political donation ever of $28,500 to the National Republican Party in April. That's right. After this guy's dad gave 28 G's to the Republicans, Bush moved to pardon him. Now, this came to light. And Bush, who you would think would be immune to any sort of shame or scandal, was actually shamed and scandalized by this and decided he's going to revoke the pardon of this guy. And that's where the story gets really interesting, because according to the TPM Muckraker blog out there with Josh Marshall, his research is telling him that you can't just revoke a pardon. Now, we all know in the Constitution that nobody can revoke a pardon once it's granted, right? Once the president pardons you, Congress can't do a thing about it. The courts can't do a thing about it. The cops can't do a thing about it. Once you're pardoned, you're pardoned. The question is, can the president revoke his own pardon? Now, there's some precedent on this. Going back about 100 years, there's a Supreme Court case out there about the president who had granted a couple of pardons, and the people who he had pardoned hadn't been notified yet, because this is, we're still talking, you know, horseback riding days and telegraph days, so they hadn't known yet, and he revoked their pardons. The President Grant, I think it was, revoked their pardons before they knew about it, and the Supreme Court decided that was okay so long as the person being pardoned hadn't been told, hadn't been aware of the pardon. Well, you can't say that in today's world, because as soon as the pardon was noted, it hits the internet, and this guy Tusi realizes he's been pardoned. So you can't take back the pardon now that it's already been granted. Now, Bush is trying to say, well, it hasn't been officially certified by the pardon attorney. Well, that's kind of a red herring, too, because the pardon attorney doesn't really certify anything. Bush certifies the pardon. When Bush says there's a pardon, there's a pardon. All the attorney does at that point is just do the paperwork, get all the paperwork in line. So, can Bush unpardon a guy that he's pardoned? It's an interesting question. All right, let's get to it. It's our last segment and time for the listener email.
Box spam!
Wonderful spam! Lovely spam! Wonderful spam! Lovely spam!
That's
last
right.
One of the year. I had to let it all out.
You had to let it all go, baby. All right. Well, for the Tim and the Enchanter hat, it's perfectly okay.
Thanks, sir.
All right. So our first email comes from Lisa in Oregon. Lisa writes, "I'm with you, Russ. Let's face it. Rick Warren is a bigoted, divisive character who engenders hatred and negativity in many people and calls it religion. Fine for him to be heard. Fine for the Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan to be heard. Fine for white supremacists to be heard. That is free speech. But he is being elevated in a way that adds legitimacy to his godless notion that he and his fellow so-called Christian fundamentalists are somehow to be respected for their invalid views. Please, will someone pass me a shoe?" Well, that's Lisa from Oregon agreeing with me for the most part. Let's go to Austin, Texas. Jake in Austin, Texas says, "How about we let Barack actually take office and govern before we start calling him a fluke? I'm as progressive as they come, and I get what he is doing. He is creating cover and space in the middle in order to get a progressive agenda through. He just might do it if we, the left, don't derail the effort before he even takes office." Well, that's back to that idea of, you know, let's tolerate the intolerant so we can reach out to the middle, right? Why is it we always have to reach out to the middle? How come the right never has to reach out to the middle? Why is that? And finally, an email from Dave who says, "Another rant on your show about prosecuting Dick Cheney. As far as I know, the only criminal he was ever in charge of was Scooter Libby. Under the Constitution, Dick's only power is to break tie votes in the Senate and serve as president in the event of Shrub's death or disability. Unless there is some secret executive order reorganizing the government, Dick isn't in charge of anything. He's not in the chain of command, so he can't order anyone to commit a crime. If you can't get real, why don't you at least get logical in your daydreams?" Yeah, okay. So Dick Cheney couldn't have ordered torture? Fine. Let's have an investigation. If he's got nothing to hide, he'll be glad to show up and testify. This is Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us this year. We'll be back next year with more progressive talk for you. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, Americans, take care of each other.
Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten. And that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing when you're feeling in the dumps.